Welcome, everyone, to the surgery endorsement maintenance follow-up call. Please note, today's call is being recorded. I will now turn things over to Alexis Foreman.
Thank you, Danielle. Good afternoon, and welcome to the surgery endorsement maintenance steering committee conference call.
Alexis, could I interrupt for a sec? Could whoever's typing please mute your line?
Thanks.
Sure. On today's conference call, the committee will continue their phase two measure follow-up, and then following that discussion, we will begin to discuss related and competing measures. Before we get started, I just want to make a note. There's been a small slight change in the agenda. Under the continuation of phase two measures follow-up, the last measure, measure 515, will be moved to 2:30. So we'll discuss that measure at 2:30 to make sure that our primary reviewer is available for discussion. So I'd now like to turn the call over to Dr. Torchiana, one of the co-chairs.
Say that one again. That was 5. Did you say 525 or 515? 515.
The hair removal measure.
So we'll want to do that at 2:30. Thank you.
Yes.
All right. Well, I think we're all familiar with the process, so I would suggest that we start in immediately. I'm on the website. Is somebody driving the pages on the website as always?
Hi, Jessica Weber. I'm in control of the webinar, and it's loading right now.
Loading right now. Okay. So let's see. I don't have. Well, maybe I do have the phase two open issues. On a printed document, because let me just look. We're starting with 125, timing of antibiotic prophylaxis for cardiac surgery patients. And that is not at the top of my pile of printed out materials. Is there someone on the call who is specifically assigned to present or evaluate this question, or are we looking for follow-up from the developer? What is actually the status of this one?
Dr. Torchiana, this is it's Melinda. This is one where we are to look at the responses from the developer and determine whether or not the responses from the developer address the issues that were raised by the committee. And for those of you who are looking at the table of suggested modifications and responses that we had sent out prior to the July 25th call, it is on page 45. And Christine Zembricki is the one who was the primary reviewer for this one, and it appears that she's not yet on the call. So the issues that the group had asked about were that the developer addressed the rating of the evidence and to provide the exact timing of the antibiotic.
Okay, and I've got the printed out version of this, and I'm now looking for the developer's response.
Okay. So while you're looking, in terms of rating the evidence, the developer indicated that that is addressed. Okay, you've got it?
Do.
So the two items were that the evidence is now addressed in the submission form and that the timing is now provided in the submission form.
I think one of the other issues was some people were questioning whether antibiotics alone should be a standalone, because there's evidence now that none of these SCIF measures alone are have evidence to support that they make a difference. It's all of them grouped together.
Okay.
And to me, I mean, this is Chris Sagal, but the response of the on-time stuff sounds reasonable.
And what we don't see, and STS is online and may want to speak to this, is the timing.
Let's say what I'm looking at, the developer's response. To actually see that the response in the shaded in area actually addresses the questions raised. So I'm having a little trouble leafing my way through the information here. I don't know if others are.
Well, I read it just now, but basically they're saying that they're making the timing issue a little bit more vague so they can allow for two different timing regimens. And, you know, I guess if you define on time in an evidence-based way, then I think you're fine. But is that part of what they describe the requirements for on time for different types of antibiotics in their measure? They avoid inserting a parenthetical modification in the numerous statement to address a 2-hour exception for Banco and 4 quinolones.
Okay. Is the online piece still loading?
Yes, Jessica is working to figure out what technical issue we're having.
So could I suggest then that it appears that we've got an adequate response, which I now have been able to track down to the timing issue, but the issue about quality of evidence is actually, it sounds like it's really more about whether the strength quality of evidence is around this single measure as opposed to the package of SCIF measures. Is there a suggestion as to how we might address that issue? Would we require this only as part of the complete bundle of surgical infection measures, or how do we address that question?
It's Melinda. What the group is going to need to do is look at what they have there in terms of the evidence to determine whether or not the evidence, regardless of it speaking to the entire set, that it specifically speak to evidence that supports the basis of this measure.
I have to say that I'm sorry, but pending things coming up on the computer, I'm pretty
And I'm sorry, Ms. Zambricki is not on the line at this time, and we're having technical difficulty with the webinar, so I would ask that those of you who are on the committee who have the information in hard copy and are looking at it, who have previously reviewed the information, might be able to discuss the question of the evidence.
So, Melinda, I'm sorry to filibuster here, but when I look at, I've got it in hard copy, and I'm familiar with the question here. When I look at what's available in hard copy on page 45, the developer response is to quality of evidence is that this is addressed in the measure submission form. And number two, in response to timing, exact timing was provided in the original measure submission form. So the greater detail that I see pages later pertains to a different measure. Do I have in this hard data the original measure submission form? If I just look farther back, is it already in what the developer has submitted? Because they're basically just punting this back to the committee, it appears to me.
I'm a little confused because on our thing, on our list here, it says the steering committee recommendation says that the evidence supporting the measure was strong, and then the conditions for the developer says rating of strength, quality of evidence, address the rating of evidence. So I'm not even sure what they were asked to do. Because above that, the updated specification is highlighted, and then it has a bunch of Class 1 level evidence A statements that support, I think, what they're trying to go for. So I think they did respond to it. I'm on page 45.
Yes,
there's like a brown brown box, and there's like a highlight. And I think they're responding to it under the highlights.
Correct. And Dr. Torchiana, the specifications of the measure are in the table that you're looking at above, in that table and above that shaded box and directly above the updated specifications. So the updated specifications related to the evidence are there on page.
I see that now. So my question is that new response then? This is the response that we got back, and it's been submitted in that part of the page. And
that
seems like a pretty pretty reasonable answer to the two two concerns raised.
I agree.
Any dissension with that?
This is Dr. Dutton. I agree.
Okay. All right. Well, then why don't we move on to 264? Can you steer us to the right page, Melinda?
That's on page 46.
So the next page. Great.
So what you see is starting with the specifications, then it has the updates that are highlighted. And then as you go down, there's the shaded area that has the questions that went back to the developer. And
one of the things that's confusing to me, and I can't quite tell, on page 46, it's yellow highlighted, says updated specifications, but I don't know, is that referring to just what's in brown on page 47, or is there something sooner than that? I'm not sure quite what to look at.
Just below updated specifications, so the information that says definitions and follows below that, are the updated specifications that were submitted by the developer in response to the questions posed by the committee.
Okay, so it's everything in white down to the next gray box, that's all new?
Correct. Those are the updates that the measure steward submitted.
Ooh.
And then below the gray box, you see the questions that went to the developer to which they are responding.
So are there any observations or questions on their response, which is obviously very detailed?
This is Nassim Asfar. It seems like they addressed the timing of antibiotics, and our second concern about the disparities of care is something that they currently don't have the capability to measure. It does look like they're looking at setting up a registry, though, to do that. So it seems like at least our two concerns were addressed there.
Yeah, they addressed the concerns in my mind that we had.
I'd agree. I agree.
Any dissension with that? Okay, hearing none, let's move on to 0357.
And that's on page 14.
Okay, I think actually I can talk about that one. That's the AAA stuff, right? So just in general, we had the biggest issue in the committee was that sorry, I'm in clinic, was having a mortality and morbidity, mortality and volume measure as a composite, and that wasn't directly addressed in the response, but what they did talk about was stratifying by endovascular and open repairs, which they agreed to do, but they don't know how those what the reliability of those measures are going to be because they've never done it, I guess, is how I'd summarize it. So they agreed to do it, but they're not sure how it's going to play out. So that was for the volume measure. They didn't really address the idea of making a composite measure in what I read. And then it's related to the next one, which is the mortality measure, which we suggested that they combine it with. They also didn't address combining with the volume measure. They didn't agree to stratify mortality by open and endovascular, but they were, again, unclear about how that would play out methodologically. They also responded in the mortality measure to questions about the signal-to-noise ratio. They clarified what they meant by that, that that was reasonable. They basically were saying that it's a measure of the noisiness of the hospital level of the model, and they basically applied at the hospital level variation is very noisy to the provider level estimates. And then the final thing was they published a risk stratification model for mortality, and this is one thing that, you know, the SVS had said in their application that there was no accepted risk adjustment model for AAA repair, although this is one that's being used apparently. I don't know what the status in the field is, whether this is widely accepted or not. This is obviously based on inpatient data when they look at comorbidities and so forth, and I think when you look at a combination of methods that look at outpatient and inpatient data, you usually get a more accurate comorbidity score. But I don't know what the field thinks about this model.
I think the concern of the as a vascular surgeon, this is Vivian, is that the coding data does not necessarily reflect clinical data accurately. The SVS is actually, as was mentioned at the prior meetings, developing their own database for risk adjusting of many vascular procedures, and they do not use this model like the STS. They are using a more clinical model than a coding model.
Yeah, you can only imagine that is a much more accurate way to do this. And, I mean, I guess these models were initially developed when all we have is claims data, but with the rise of these registries, that's an opportunity to really do this in a much more precise way. So,
The other question was is that the measure had said they would come back with something on at this meeting to help define how they would redesign their model to account for endovascular versus open repairs.
Right, and that is still in process, I think. They really haven't – they talked about it, but they haven't been able to do it.
And there are representatives on the line, and you may want to hear from them at this point.
That'd be great.
So, John and Patrick, are those issues that you can speak to now?
Yeah, ideally, Jeff Geppert would have been here today since he did that development, but I think Patrick is here to speak in Jeff's absence.
Yes, that's correct. This is Patrick Romano. From UC Davis on behalf of the ARC team. So we have definitely had some analytic work underway to address this issue, and we do have some preliminary results that we just shared with NQF staff this morning, so we can provide further documentation and circulate to the larger committee if appropriate. But what we have done is to stratify the entire group into four strata, basically the ruptured aneurysms versus the unruptured aneurysms. And within those two groups, we have the open versus the endovascular repairs. So when we do that, we see basically what you would expect clinically in terms of the changes over the past 6 years. The most recent year of data that we've been able to analyze is 2008, and in that year, a total of 8.5% of patients had ruptured aneurysms. 91.5% had unruptured aneurysms. Among the ruptured aneurysms, 69% were repaired open and 31% by endovascular. Among the unruptured aneurysms, only 24% were repaired open, 76% were repaired endovascular. Again, those numbers come from 2008. So what we've then done is to estimate a risk adjustment model for each of those strata, and we do find some differences in the risk factors across the strata. Specifically, for example, gender, female gender, is a significant risk factor for the endovascular subsets, but not for the open subsets.
And that actually makes sense because they often have access issues.
And don't mean to interrupt, but July 26th, the measure maintenance forms were revised based on NQS requests, and the information Patrick is speaking from is in those forms. But unfortunately, columns really don't come out very well in the NQF form, so it's not all that easy to follow given the nature of the formatting in which the NQF measure maintenance forms kind of transform things into.
Are you talking about?
They're in the measure. What Patrick is talking about are in the measure maintenance forms we resubmitted for NQF request July 26th. And I think the question that Patrick is covering the results for question 2A11.
The committee has not seen those forms. That's why I'm not.
Oh, they haven't? Oh, I thought.
No. Well, some of us have them printed. It's actually on page 16 of the printed copy, but we can't pull it up on the web right now so that we can put it in front of everyone. But
yeah, well, I think Patrick.
This is Jessica. You should be able to see the webinar right now, and the results should be up there.
Is it titled Table 3 Risk Adjustment Coefficients for IQI number 11? Is that what it's titled?
I see Model Covariance 2008. It's Table 2A.
Yes, if you proceed to the next table.
Uh-huh.
2B. Right. So this table just illustrates the point that I just made about the, if you look at the endovascular subsets, the asterisk indicates that gender was a significant risk factor for those subsets, but not for the open subsets. The age effects are similar. The comorbidity effects are generally similar. There are some differences also related to the transfer effect, which is stronger for the endovascular repair than for open repair. But the other point that I would make is that we've done some initial work looking at the variability across hospitals, and that's shown back in Table 2, two tables earlier, and effectively, just to highlight one point, what I would show in the top half of that is that for the endovascular unruptured subset, the low-risk patients undergoing endovascular repair, now that's 70% of all the AAA patients now, but it's only 15% of all the deaths that are contributed from that stratum. And so there's very little signal at the hospital level in that particular stratum. So you can see that effectively it's impossible to identify hospital outliers for the endovascular unruptured patients. That's what the 0% means, that we were, because the overall mortality in that group is only 1%. So it's impossible to identify hospitals that are doing better than expected. Whereas for each of the other subsets, you can see that there is more substantial variation in mortality at the hospital level, and it is possible to identify hospitals that are significantly above or below average.
Can I ask, is there clustering with certain hospitals doing a lot more ruptured or open AAA repairs?
Yes. They tend to, especially for endovascular ruptures, if you're going to do a rupture endovascularly, you kind of need to have some stuff in stock. A lot of hospitals don't stock endovascular grafts. So they tend to go towards places where it's more easy to obtain. I mean, the people who do the ruptures endovascularly tend to be in hospitals where they have stuff in stock.
Right.
Because it's readily off the shelf.
The question I had then basically was from the ARC perspective, you know, we talked about these risk stratification models, and if some hospitals are really taking on some of the higher risk cases, are there better ways to do risk stratification than just inpatient diagnoses, and how do you feel that your model compares with ones that are based on either clinical data or a combination of inpatient and outpatient diagnoses?
Right. Well, we have not been able to do a direct comparison of that. I would say that in general, if you look at the C statistic, which is one measure of model performance, it's better for the unruptured aneurysms for those two subsets than it is for the ruptured aneurysms. That's not too surprising, because for the ruptured subset, there are physiologic factors that are probably more important determinants of mortality that are not fully captured here, of course. Hmm. And I would also agree that we analyzed a total of 1,700 hospitals' data in this analysis, and only 500 of those hospitals do endovascular repair of ruptured aneurysms. So that's clearly a subset of hospitals that feel like they have the technical capability to do that.
Yeah. I'm looking at what's on the screen right now, and obviously don't have the ability to look at the fine print because all I can see is what's here. But in the endovascular unruptured column, I can see that there's very little difference between the best performing hospital and the worst performing hospital. That would make sense to me. But if I look over to the left at the open ruptured, it actually looks like there's very little difference between the best performing and the worst performing hospital there as well, where they're, you know, one's 24%, one's 26% or something like that.
That actually also makes sense because, you know, the statistics for ruptures are, you know, 80% don't make it to the hospital, and of the 20% that do, it's about a 50-50 chance of survival. That statistic basically has not changed much over many, many years, despite improvement in care. So it might be just be related to the disease process.
But is it a useful measure then if the difference between the best performing and the worst performing hospital is so narrow? Is that useful as an indicator?
The problem is, again, it may, like Dr. Romano mentioned, there may be physiologic predictors that are not so easily obtainable here that may make more difference.
Well, but also, doesn't it make sense to pull those areas, those homogeneous areas where there is little variation, out of the total aggregate so that the areas where there is variation are visible and specific? Isn't that actually an improvement in discrimination?
Probably.
There might be a little misinterpretation here. If you're referring to the upper half, that's basically telling you what percentage of the hospitals can be identified as better or worse than average. So in the case of the endovascular unruptured repair, basically it's no hospitals. But for each of the other subsets, we are able to identify a significant chunk of hospitals as being better or worse than average. If you look at the lower half of that table, it shows...
Okay, what's the upper half and what's the lower half? I'm looking... What's on the screen right now is table 2?
Yes, that's the same table I'm referring to. So if you look at the lower half of that table, those rows represent percentiles. So, for example, the 10th percentile mortality rate for open repair of ruptured aneurysms would be 33.4%. The 90th percentile would be 43.3%. So roughly a 10% absolute difference in the risk-adjusted mortality there between the 10th and the 90th percentile. So that's, in relative terms, 10% on a base of 40% is not that much. In absolute terms, it's 1 out of 10 patients.
So then at the top, and I'm just trying to understand the table and just without, you know, explanatory information, just looking at what's on the screen, it's hard to know. But at the best performing and worst performing, is that a percentage of hospitals or a percentage of patients?
That's a percentage of hospitals.
Okay, so then for open ruptured, 24% of hospitals were better than expected and 26% were worse than expected?
Yes. And, of course, the way this is structured is that you would expect 5% just by chance under the null hypothesis, so to speak.
Patrick, maybe you could comment. I mean, this seems like when we had this discussion in Washington, there was some objection to breaking it down into these components, but it looks like when you look at these numbers that by breaking it down into these components, you've actually proved the ability of the model to discriminate in those areas where differences appear to exist.
Right. Well, we see that, and so we have agreed to make this change. What we're still working on is to sort of figure out how to put this back together with the volume, and this was referred to in the earlier discussion. So I think that we want to move in the same direction that the LeapFrog group has in terms of, as most people know, as most of the developers of these kinds of models now use some type of hierarchical regression or smoothing approach that regresses outliers back towards the mean based on the reliability of the data. So that's what we're in the process of figuring out, and in this case, we're incorporating volume into that smoothing. But we don't have data to report on that yet. But
what's the time frame for that?
I can't speak to it, but I know that it's a high priority for the team. Jeff Geppert leads the analytic team, so I think that this is moving quickly.
Well, that's great. So I think personally, you know, to tie this up, I mean, my view is that you did a great job responding, and it's all great data, but I would like to see a composite. And if you're close to it, that would be, I don't know what the mechanism is to put that in as a resubmission or something like that, but that's what I would think would make the most sense.
I agree that we need to see the composite. I'm actually very interested in this data that you've presented. It kind of confirms what we all suspect or know from vascular surgery. It would be nice to see the whole data so we can review it and then discuss it in more detail.
It's Melinda. This is a question for John and Patrick. So at this point, is it your sense that these two measures will not move forward as separate measures, rather you will have a composite that comes forward to replace them?
Well, that's my understanding of what we're trying to do with this analysis,
okay.
If that's
okay.
Possible. Is that what your understanding was, Patrick?
Yes. I mean, it's just that there are practical issues related to the versioning of the ARC software and contractual issues and so forth, but I think that's what we're all trying to do.
Okay. Then what we will do at NQF is double back with you in terms of your timing so that we can inform the committee about next steps.
Yeah, and again, we'd need Jeff on the call to say something more absolute.
Sure.
That's a good idea to check back with us when we can talk with Jeff.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Okay, so then am I still on for the next two here, which are the SBS measures of mortality for open and endovascular triple A repairs. And that's we're not on the agenda, right?
No, I think this is, I don't see that on today's agenda. I think that's tomorrow's agenda, looking at harmonization.
See it at 105. It's measure 357, 359. Am I wrong there? It's for tomorrow. I'm sorry. Okay, I apologize.
Okay.
I was incorrect. Well, I'll be in the OR tomorrow, so unfortunately, I won't be there.
Well, given the fact of the discussion that's just occurred, that will not be a part of the discussion of related and competing measures tomorrow. So have a good surgery.
Okay. Thank you.
And I'd just like to thank Patrick and the ARC team for really interesting information and for, I think, very constructive headway on this question. It's terrific.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you.
I would like to thank them, too, as a vascular surgeon, because I think this data is very good.
Well, we appreciate the opportunity to receive and respond to input from this year.
So, Melinda, with your blessing, I guess we're not ready for 5:15 because we're holding that till 2:30. So I would suggest that we move into the review of Phase 2 related and competing measures at this point. Do we need to stop for public comment before doing that?
It would probably be useful to go ahead and do that before we transition to related and competing.
Okay.
Danielle, can you please open the line?
Absolutely. All lines are open.
Could we ask that any members of the public who have comments on the two measures that we just resolved or the one that we left for future consideration, please comment at this time? Hearing none, why don't we move on to Phase 2 then, related and competing measures?
And you have a separate document that provides some background about related and competing measures and then the tables of measures. And before we start into the discussion of the tables of measures, while you've heard some of this information at the meeting in the past, before we actually start into this, it would be useful if we could have a little bit of a review of the approach and what we're trying to do here. And Heidi Bosley is on, I believe, to help give us some of that.
Hello, this is Heidi. So I know that you all had some preliminary discussions at the in-person meeting a few months ago, and now we're to the time I think you actually have information in front of you that leads you to the next step, which is looking at those measures that fall into those two categories of either related and competing. And we've provided for you kind of guidance that we've developed in an effort to make this as clear as possible. We know this is a tough thing to go through, but again, to just walk through the definitions of what we define as a competing measure, and those are the ones that essentially address the same target process, condition, event, or outcome, and have the same target population. So your numerator and your denominator really do get at the same things. Related measures would be things that vary on that. So they may be the same numerator, but it may be a different denominator, and that's where we start talking about harmonization. But when we're looking at competing, we've been asked by the Consensus Standards Approval Committee as well as the board to try to get to a more discrete set where you either have measures that we acknowledge are competing, but there is a reason or justification for why you would want to continue those measures. That may be data source. It may be that you don't have the information in front of you yet to determine that. But if you can decide on a better measure of one of the two or however many you have in front of you, we would like to have you go ahead and have that discussion today and determine that. So why don't I just stop for a second and see if anyone has questions, because this is still a new part of our process, so I want to make sure everyone understands kind of the intent of today before we get into the measures. Wow, I made sense on the phone. This is good. Okay.
Well,
so, I'm just waiting, yes. So we'll see. But I think, Melinda, you had the prophylactic antibiotics discontinued duration is your first set?
Yes.
Okay. So maybe what would make sense, and again, the cardiovascular committee did it one way. I think you all need to figure out what works best for you, but it might make sense at least we can walk through perhaps all of the measures that should be considered, make a decision on whether we think they're related measures, and then the issue of harmonization comes up, or whether they're actually competing measures, and then have the separate discussion. So maybe it would help to walk through those. Melinda, are you and Alexa, is one of you going to, Alexa's going to do that?
So on page 59 of the related and competing measures set are the measures that we're talking about. And what we attempted to do there is to lay those out in a table so that you could see the specifications together, and to provide you some information at the top of the table to summarize a bit of information about the measures in order to let you look at the question of related or competing. So on the measure 637 and measure 128, they're both specific to cardiac procedures. They both are focused on the same age population. They both are addressing the question of discontinuation of antibiotics within 48 hours of surgery in time. The level of analysis is clinician group. They do use different data sources. So 637 uses health record data, and 128 uses registry data. And the group had talked about your feelings about those relationships. Then in measure 529, it does include cardiac measures. It does probably the first thing to note is it includes procedures in addition to cardiac. And the level of analysis is at the hospital level. So clearly there are some differences between 529 and the first two measures, 637 and 128. And then 271 specifically excludes cardiac procedures. And the level of analysis is clinician or either individual or group. So it is, again, different from both the first and second, which you might look at as coming closer to addressing the question of competing other than, or I should say other than, but initially something you'd spoken about in terms of the data. So the goal here is to look at these measures and make determinations about which, if any, are competing measures, and then which, if any, are related measures. And in terms of the related measures, what you're going to be looking at is, are they harmonized? And if they are not harmonized, are there things that you would suggest in terms of improving harmonization? So if you want to think about it in first, second, and third order, maybe what you want to start with is, are there competing measures? And Heidi, you may want to add to some of this in addition to responding to the questions as we go.
Sure, I'm just myself trying to find the page on the PDF.
Right there.
I got it. Okay.
Yeah, it's on page 59.
Yeah.
As you were talking, Melinda, there were, you mentioned things like the level of analysis being the physician or the group. I'm trying to find where that is to be able to line things up and review it, and I'm having trouble finding that.
Well, again, these are laid out with the specifications, and it'll be near the bottom of the table. So some of these tables go on for many pages. So it'll be within that table, but it'll be near the bottom of the table.
Just scroll up and down it, and maybe what we should do is to try to organize our discussion by what's visible on the table to some degree. I might throw in just one other thing on this on the first page of this table that was visible until just a moment ago. There was an additional piece that was somewhat different, which I don't remember hearing a discussion of, but among these measures, which is the difference between an order existing to stop the antibiotics and the antibiotics actually being stopped. That seems like there's a nuance there that obviously exists for a reason. I could speculate as to the reasons, but I'm not sure that in practice it is all that important. But certainly that ought to be harmonized, if nothing else. And then the just about the cardiac versus non-cardiac, as to why that. This, I assume, it has something to do with the source, the developer, but it obviously would be attractive if this group could sort of nudge all of this towards harmonization, irrespective of the type of surgery and the developing organization, assuming the evidence base allows that to happen.
Yeah, this is Heidi. That's a really good point. So I think one thing, too, just talking out loud of the four measures you have in front of you, now two of them, 128 and 529, are actually before the committee to be considered for endorsement or not, recommended continued endorsement. I would just note that while if you looked at 271 and 637, and felt that the ones that you have before you are better measures, what would happen is it just would be noted that you actually feel that these are, again, I'm not trying to put words in, this is just a scenario, superior measures, and the other two at the point of the next maintenance may very well be retired for that reason. So keep in mind, while you can't, you may ask for harmonization, we can see what we can do for the ones that are endorsed and not within the scope of this project. I actually know that the testing results are due on these measures, so we're expecting some potential changes on these two in the coming few months. But if you feel that they should be harmonized, we'll work toward that. They actually look like, Melinda, when you're going through it, I think the level of analysis and the data source do vary, potentially. Well, 529 and 128 are one clinician and one is. Facility. Yeah.
That's the biggest thing I see here is that in 637 and 271, it's analyzing at the clinician level, whereas 128 and 529 are really at the hospital level. And, you know, we can break down cardiac or non-cardiac procedures, but, you know, for the two that are already endorsed, I see that's the biggest difference compared to what we've, you know, looked at in May.
Right.
And what page are you on to find that information?
We're on page 96.
Thank you.
Well, and also, if you just even look, the staff has noted it at the top of page 59 as well. So I just realized that they put this up here, which is helpful. 637 is specific to cardiac on page 59. It at least gives a summary.
Right, and that's what we tried to do through all of them because some of them are multi-pages, so we tried to add the summary of the level of analysis and that type of information at the top of the document in order to help you start thinking about it. And the other thing is Heidi noted for all of the measures that are currently undergoing review, we have noted that, and we have also noted the voting of the committee with respect to meeting the criteria for all of them.
Hi, this is Donna from STS. I just wanted to point out one other difference between 637 and 128. And 637 addresses an order for discontinuation of the antibiotic, and 128 is actual discontinuation of the antibiotic.
So you may correct.
Good point, yeah.
And then whenever you continue to look through there at the denominator of 637, it is patients with who received. So there are some differences in the way in which it's written, because when you look at the denominator, it does speak to patients who received the antibiotic. But you're correct in the way of which it's stated at the top.
Hi, this is Rick. A couple questions. Does it matter if it's a cardiac or a non-cardiac surgery? Are the standards different in cardiac surgery?
So the answer there would be, with the cardiac surgeries, it's 48 hours, and with the really every other procedure, especially with the CMS document, it's 24 hours discontinuation. I think that's probably the biggest difference between the two.
So we clearly need two different measures there, although they should perhaps be harmonized to have their other definitions the same way.
And on the individual piece, given that that's different among these different measures, what is the rationale for considering this an individual provider measure? It seems like there are typically multiple providers involved in both the antibiotics as well as their discontinuation. So it seems like it's a much more logical hospital measure than individual measure. And perhaps maybe an individual measure within a hospital, but I just wonder if there's been a prior discussion on this, or if we have anyone who is conversant on the various aspects of this. I mean, just as an example, most antibiotics for heart surgery are given by the anesthesiologist, not the surgeon.
Oh, I'm one of them. But yeah, my take on it would be this is a team measure, and trying to attribute it down to the individual level doesn't make a whole lot of sense in most systems. I would strongly support making this a hospital level measure.
And it's Melinda, and Heidi may be able to help with this, but at the time that there was a press and a call for looking at individual, particularly individual physician measures, there were measures that were submitted by the AMA Physician Consortium for performance improvement, and the measures that you're looking at the clinician level were submitted at that time when there was that specific focus in a project to look at physician level measures.
Right. This is Heidi. Just to kind of add on that, and I should provide a disclaimer. I actually was working for the AMA PCPI when they developed these measures. I was kind of on the periphery of them, but they were trying to get at, in part because of the Physician Quality Reporting Initiative, or now PQRS, trying to get to the point where you could get reporting for an individual surgeon. So I think what will happen, what we can do is we can have conversations with the PCPI staff. I know they're testing it, and they're also planning on updating and really looking at these measures. And we should get something new. We can see where they are in the process. And part of the expectation we can communicate to them, if you all agree, is that there is harmonization with the existing hospital measures. So that at least we know that they, and I know at the time they had attempted to harmonize them. I'm just not sure that I'm seeing it now again. So that's one thing we can do. I guess the other question that we would have, and I don't want to move us too quickly, but I do see some potential opportunities for harmonization with 128 and 529. I would call them related measures because one's cardiac procedures, one's non-cardiac. But I don't know that they are completely harmonized when you look at the exclusions, and again, that makes sense for the reason, so on and so forth. So that could be one potential recommendation you put forward.
I mean, just on the individual provider issue, discontinuation could easily be more directly attributed to an individual than initiation or getting it, I think, in a timely way. But everything you said makes sense to me.
So then, are we hearing that it is the will of the committee to go back to the organizations and ask them to look together and at how they might harmonize these measures, and that we go back to PCPI regarding where they are with their activities with those measures?
Do we need any guidance as to the direction that we might suggest harmonization should go in, or do we leave that to the developers to determine?
This is Heidi. I think sometimes it's helpful to get a sense from the committee what exactly where you could potentially see the opportunities. And I don't know that there are many, but I think in the exclusions there potentially could be to refine it so that you're capturing the same information and you all may identify more as well.
Those opportunities might be.
Hello? I think I lost the call.
No, you're still there.
Okay.
Well, I guess I would be one to suggest that the duration is obviously an opportunity for harmonization, and if there is a sound evidence base to suggest that the 48 hours for heart surgery and the 24 hours for other kind of heart surgeries is actually based on some valid data, that it would seem reasonable to keep that separate. But if there isn't data, it would seem like it might be reasonable to try to harmonize that as well. Certainly, the level that it's measured at for the administration doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense to try to do that at the provider level, whether or not discontinuing it might continue to be a lot of it as a provider level measure is another one, just because those measures are valued so highly. And then can we look at the exclusions?
So Jessica, yeah. That's on page 65. I'm already there. There's 65 if it's easier to scroll through that way.
I mean, it does seem like the exclusion in the right column under 0271 seems like a very elegant one, but that, of course, requires review of the medical record, that is, documentation of medical reasons, with the typical one being preoperative infectious disease. The ones that are based on coding measures obviously have to make that all explicit.
I thought they were also going to take out the laparoscopic. Wasn't this the one they were going to take out, the laparoscopic exclusion?
I believe so.
That's in the second column one, the 0128.
Okay, well, is that helpful? Are those bits of guidance helpful?
Definitely, yes. That's great. So we can communicate. Melinda and Alexis will work with the developers and see if they can either provide a information on why they can't harmonize to the extent or that they have.
Right, and that's what we'll do with all of these in terms of whatever the committee requests, then we'll go back with the developers to ask them to do that. And so I just want to confirm with the group that as you looked at it, you did see that there might be opportunities for harmonization 637 and 128, but you did not see those as competing measures. Is that correct?
I would agree with that.
Okay. So then, are you ready to move on to the prophylactic antibiotics? The selection?
I have a question on that because there's a measure in there that's a DVT prophylaxis. I don't know how that got in there.
You are correct, and it should not be in there, so disregard it. I thought we had gotten it out, and that's a failure on my part. I recognized that and thought that I'd gotten it out. But
oh, there's a lot of them. Okay, let's see.
So a lot of, you're saying a lot of what?
The prophylactic antibiotics. I see it goes on to the next page, too.
So the prophylactic antibiotic selection.
Oh, I see. I got it.
The VTE measure is not in the table.
This is page.
And this is on page 97.
Table a little bit.
And again, at the very top of the table, we try to give you some of the information that otherwise you're going to scroll to the bottom of the table to see in terms of the data source and the level of measurement in particular. And you see that the two measures, 126 and 528, are undergoing maintenance review right now.
Don't we have a similar issue here in that one deals with cardiac and one deals with all the other types of patients, like in our previous measure?
Yeah.
Yeah, we do. From my understanding, it's 126 is just for the cardiac patients from the STS. The CMS in measure 528, I believe, is cardiac and all the SIP procedures as well. The one we haven't seen is 268. Which, you know, I haven't sorted through and looked through all the procedures, but I imagine there's some overlap there. 268 is, again, as we were looking at with the last discussion, it's at the clinician level, where 528 is at the hospital level and 126 is both at the clinician and the facility level. And as far as 268, the numerator, I believe, is a little bit different. It's patients in the procedures where first or second generation cephalosporins are indicated versus 528 and 126. I think that the definition is a little more broad, and that would include procedures with, you know, not just first and generation cephalosporins, but, you know, all the other CMS and SIP antibiotics that are available. So I do think, especially 528 is way more broad potentially than 268 or even 126, which is limited to cardiac procedures.
So what I hear you saying is that there are not competing measures in this group. if that's correct, then the next question is, are there opportunities for harmonization?
Yeah, there should be.
Yeah, I would agree too.
And as you look at them in the table now, can you identify some of those opportunities that would direct us as we go back to the developers?
The top of the table again? On the computer? We have STS, AMA, and CMS.
Well, one thing would be to focus on reporting at the facility level.
Also, I would wonder, do we think it's important to separate out those procedures that are need, to separate out just those procedures who need first or second generation cephalosporins? Like, I'm not clear on why is that important over other antibiotic selections.
Why couldn't, could I rephrase that and suggest maybe what you're asking is why couldn't 0268 be folded into 0528? Is that?
Yeah, more or less. No, we don't have the original, since it's a, I don't know that we reviewed that one specifically as part of our endorsement, you know, maintenance measures previously.
Yeah. The ones that you reviewed for endorsement maintenance are marked there at the top. So it's 126 and 528.
Yeah.
And because we didn't say this at the top, what we did, in addition to the maintenance measures that you were looking at or the new measures, is that because there is the opportunity for harmonization across all of the endorsed measures, we did go out and pull in any measure that was endorsed that appeared that it would be fall into the category of either related and competing. So it is true that the specifications that you're having the opportunity to see for those that you've not been reviewing is limited to what's in the table.
Right. I mean, I don't know how other feel about that, but I'm not clear as to why that should be a separate measure.
I agree. It seems like it should be a subset of a single measure.
So then what you would direct us to do is to go back to these two developers and ask that they look at opportunities to combine this into a single measure.
Yes.
And,
okay.
Melinda, could I ask, I would guess that that might pertain to all three categories of discontinued duration, selection, and timing received.
So in those various groups of measures, when for the one that we just completed, you're saying go back and revisit that in terms of the same opportunity?
Well, I'm wondering if the real definition of the May measure group is that it was developed around these first and second generation cephalosporins and is therefore a subset of all surgeries.
And I don't believe in the first one that we looked at, the antibiotics were specified, rather the timing of the discontinuation of the antibiotics.
Right. This is Heidi. I think they were, all these measures that were developed by the three different developers were assumed to be used as they set. So I think the assumption is we're kind of working through these a little backwards, maybe. But the assumption is you've done the right antibiotic.
You have to start it.
Yeah.
And then discontinue it. And I would assume that they're all attached together like cars on a train. And so if you start revising adopting one piece of these with another measure set, you would really be, I think, compelled to do all the whole cascade.
Okay. So what we will do, unless you want to revisit the first three, is we'll go back and look at it in that way, in terms of going back to the developers and asking them to take a look at the ability to combine measures that fall along the continuum of addressing antibiotic administration.
Is the AMA measure a chart review and the CMS measure a coding derived?
The AMA measure is administrative claims data, and the FTS measure is registry data.
Asking, so both the AMA and the CMS are both claims data?
Correct.
So that shouldn't be an impediment then to trying to bring them to a single standard.
That's correct. But what I thought I understood is that you were looking for 126 and 268 to be combined, and so then we are looking at registry data and administrative data.
No, 0268 and 0528, the AMA and the CMS one, to be combined.
Okay. All right. That's my mistake. Okay. You're right. They both use claims data.
That's why this request is impractical and that there's a significant impediment to achieving it. But otherwise, it seems like it would be very worthwhile to pursue this and to eliminate the competition around this one, since they seem very similarly designed.
Okay. So are you comfortable with that and ready to move to the next step? And Heidi, are you comfortable with the way in which this is approached in that manner of going back to them to look at the combining them? In terms
yeah.
Of, okay.
For 268 and 528, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know that came up when they were initially endorsed, and because 268 is only looking at clinician, it became challenging. But we can always go back and ask. And again, because PCPI is updating the measure and they just, I think, are completing testing, it will be interesting to see where they are in this. It may be very informative. We may have some good news. So we'll go back and see.
Okay, so if you're ready to move to the next step, and this is the timing of antibiotics receiving the antibiotics, and that starts on page 128. And again, at the top there is a bit of a summary in terms of the focus of the measure, the data source, the level of measurement. That is included in the specifications if you want to look at it in total in the table. And the first two measures are the measures that are currently undergoing maintenance review. The first one being limited to cardiac surgery, the second one, 527, being the broader group of surgical patients.
My first comment would be 0270 and 0269, since we earlier talked about it being a team effort, that they could potentially be combined. Since often in the OR you kind of as a surgeon, or, you know, the team says, okay, what antibiotics do you want? It's like part of our pre-op check. Not like somebody actually physically puts an order in the chart necessarily.
Could we scroll down on the computer a little bit so we can read each facet of the chart?
Can I ask when we – I'm having a hard time seeing this on the screen. When was this sent to us? Because I'm trying to find the old email, but I can't find it right now.
It was sent on Friday around 6 p.m. Eastern time.
Okay. Ah, I got it.
I didn't print it because it was 180 pages, but it might be good to open just to open the PDF. I'll do that too.
And I'll just note that where you see track changes in any of these tables, it's because these are where changes in the specifications have been made as a result of your request, just so you can see that.
And what pages are we on here now?
It's 132, I think is where it starts.
Thank you.
I think it starts on...
Sorry, 129. Okay. Yeah.
Wow, that second column goes on a ways. So I guess just looking, the middle three are electronic data, and the two measured at the level of the individual. Those are the two that are, again, the AMA ones?
The AMA, there's one AMA measure. It's 270.
Well, it seems like the same issues are going to apply. I would ask, why is cardiac different from other surgeries? The timing issues should be the same.
I would suggest that facility reporting rather than individual would make more sense. And in this case, some of these are for outpatient or ambulatory centers and some for inpatient. And again, I would say, what's the difference? They really should all be the same measure.
A question is, if it all falls under the same measure, then is there a problem with who becomes the measure steward and then how the data is distributed? Because I think all these groups want to use this data. So then would one place become the distributor of data, basically?
And that would be something that the developers would have to address among themselves. And you're correct that typically out of it there would be a determination about who would become the steward of the measure. But again, that would be a part of the discussion among the developers as they're addressing the question.
So I'm trying to figure out the difference between 270 and 269. So looking up at the top, one is identified as AMA, this Physician Consortium for Performance Improvement. The other one is NCQA.
With AMA.
This is Heidi. I can answer that. It's actually, this one was both those measures and any ones that you have been looking at that are AMA PCPI were jointly developed with College of Surgeons, NCQA, and PCPI. So we've just got some inconsistencies in our labeling and our database at the moment.
Right, but one very specifically says ordering physician and the other administering physician.
Yep.
Was that a deliberate attempt to have a separate measure for each?
Yes, it was at the time.
I think the importance we're looking at now is the fact that the patient gets the antibiotics.
Right. Exactly, and actually we're hoping to see a different measure or a modified measure come forward as a result of testing on these two.
Okay, so I guess we would encourage that.
Yeah. Right. So again, you're faced with, and we know it's difficult, for those two measures, you're really not able to do much other than provide some feedback, and we're happy to give that to the developers as they're testing and modifying. But then you have to, it sounds like you're more comfortable with the measures that actually go with received, which are the ones in front of you now. So we would anticipate at the next maintenance review measures that would look at ordering versus actually receipt would be ranked and rated lower and potentially not, you know, perhaps not move forward again. That wouldn't know for sure.
Yeah, because, I mean, I can tell you as a practical, I mean, there are other surgeons on the committee, so they can speak to this too, but as a practicality, both where I'm working now and where I worked before, we didn't actually place an order in the chart. It was a discussion that happened in the OR as part of our pre-op, you know, team thing to say, okay, yeah, can you please give X antibiotic? So I don't know that an order was ever actually physically put in the chart for the first antibiotic.
Sure. Right, and I would hope that as a result of testing, some of those nuances would have come through.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think they anticipate as well as we do when we get the testing results.
Thank you, Vivian. Order written.
I'm sorry?
I said that's our current practice also. There's no order written.
Yeah.
And I guess I'd say on the last one, on the fifth column, 0472, why 70 and I'm trying to figure this one out. Do we have the same, I would imagine we have the same issue around the limitation of the AMA measure to the first and second generation cephalosporin, and why all three of these on the right wouldn't end up ultimately folded over to the second column under 0527, which would be then a more general
standard for surgical procedures receiving antibiotic prophylaxis, it would seem like they could all march under the same banner, as opposed to having these special circumstances that are, you know, have only nuanced differences.
I would agree with that.
I mean, why a C-section should have any different standard than any other abdominal operation, I'm not aware of any difference, and especially this is about timing surgical incision, so we're not dealing with antibiotic choice or duration here. So you would think it would just follow the same standards.
So then what we would do is go back to the developer and look at AMAPCQI to talk to them about the potential of, based on their testing, either eliminating or in some way moving away from 270, which is ordering, and then look at 472, 269, and 527 combined into a single measure that more closely mirrors 527.
But as I read down 472, it's covering not only cesarean section but also delivery. And delivery, of course, is a little bit different in terms of timing than cesarean section. So maybe it is a unique circumstance. I don't know. I guess I'd ask the developer the question. The one comment that's on page 129 is basically about the imperfection of surgery actually occurs.
Okay, so we would ask the Massachusetts General partners to speak to whether or not it is in fact different enough, or whether it could be combined. Is that and the question is around delivery.
Yeah, the cesarean section maybe could be combined and the delivery remains separate, I suppose. But it just seems like having five different measures for antibiotic prophylaxis of surgical incisions doesn't really serve anyone well.
Okay, so if the groups agreed, we will look at 270 and 269 in terms of potential for eliminating 270 and retaining 269 as administration, and we deal with that in terms of what they are testing now and what they expect to bring back, clarify with the developer 472, about what the differences are and to the extent to which the cesarean section part of it could be folded into a measure that would more closely mirror 527.
Yes. Well, I think maybe even all of them, what I think some of us are trying to say is that really the timing of antibiotics is should not be different from surgical procedure to surgical procedure. There isn't a lot of data to support that it would be different between different surgical procedures, and should there only be one, and then separate out deliveries, because delivery seems to have, from their comments, a slightly different timing.
Okay. I'm sorry, Dr. Torchiana?
Yeah, I think potentially everything, you know, unless there's a different evidence base for the duration, et cetera, administration prior to incision, it seems like 527 is the one that could ultimately encompass all the others, except
okay.
for delivery.
Okay. So the last question that I have with respect to it is that 125 uses registry data and the others use administrative data.
Yeah, and that's, I think there's two problems with the cardiac data. One is whether the evidence base is different,
Then the second one would be whether or not the registry versus coding results in significantly different outcomes when you look across institutions. And so that may be a sufficient reason to consider the STS measure a competing measure rather than one that can be easily harmonized.
Okay, so we'll work to get clarification about that and then look to try to get the information back to you. And you'll see the summary of the meeting. So if in the summary of the meeting there's any additional clarification that you feel like we need to do because we didn't precisely understand today's discussion, call that to our attention. So please.
We'll help you with that. I mean, this is, I think, a complicated issue that will become probably more complicated when it gets back to the developers, because I have no doubt that there'd be some pushback. Do we have any of the developers on the phone?
We do have STS on the, we have a representative, I believe, from STS on the phone. I do not believe we have representatives of the other developers on the phone today. So we're probably going to be better served to go back to them and not try to address the questions on the phone absent developer representation.
Segment and move to the original back to the top of the agenda to 5:15 and see if we have our all of our participants for that, the surgery patients with appropriate hair removal, and then we'll come back to the rest of the agenda if we have time.
There are a couple of issues related to the rest of the agenda. I do not believe that we will have the principal reviewers of the statin medications and the pancreatic resection tomorrow. So to the extent we can get that finished today, we're going to be probably a bit ahead.
This is Nassim Asar for measure 515. I will be there on the call tomorrow, so if you wanted to delay 515 to tomorrow, I could also present it tomorrow.
That sounds really good. And so, Dr. Torchiana, you might want to go ahead with the related and competing, knowing we have her tomorrow.
Okay, let's go to Statin.
Hello?
Hello. Somebody's trying to say something.
Sorry, this is Donna Flossberg, and I'm the measure developer for 515. I'm a little confused as to who was just talking.
So, Donna, Donna?
Yeah?
It's Melinda Murphy at NQF. Will you be able to be on the call tomorrow?
I can be on the call, but unfortunately, Susan White and Kim Wood cannot, and they were going to be speaking to this measure. And I believe Kim is on the phone now.
Donna, this is Kim. I think the call tomorrow, what time is it scheduled for?
4 p.m.
I can attend at 4 p.m.
Okay.
Thank you for that.
Okay, thank you. So will we be the first one on the call tomorrow then at 4:05 if we move it to tomorrow?
Sure.
Okay, that would be great.
Yes.
Especially,
be,
it looks like we wouldn't be talking about the aneurysm ones tomorrow, right, because we won't have all the data together.
Correct. Well, we definitely will not be talking about 357 and 359 because we're looking for a composite measure as opposed to two individual measures. So you're correct.
Okay, well, let's, in the time that we have available, then go to statin medications, I would suggest. And what page is that on?
That's on page 176.
So there are two measures. They do look at different populations. They both use registry data, two different registries. So this may be a question of potential for harmonization, or you may determine that they are different enough based on the population that that they should move along without any additional work. They both are undergoing maintenance review, so you have reviewed both of these in detail. And you will see in 1519 that there are changes that have been requested that are reflected in red line. The other thing that I would make note of is if you're looking at something in terms of competing measures, and these are not competing unless you recommend something quite different than what you see, that if you're looking at a new measure in a set of competing measures, you would want to address the question of why the new measure should replace the currently endorsed measure.
They're completely different. I mean, they're different procedures. So.
Yes.
Yeah, they're different procedures in different patient populations.
Yeah.
I could see some attractiveness to having the same criteria around the, the basic concept is that these are patients with underlying atherosclerosis, and that anti-lipid therapy is good for them in general, but also potentially specifically good in terms of graft patency. So it would be nice if the criteria for follow-up were harmonized, but it's obviously not essential because they're not really competing in terms of purporting to measure the same thing in the same patient population. But just briefly looking at this, what are the major differences in the follow-up or in the way in which the measures are?
Yeah, I'm not seeing a time window on the STS one, if it's just discharge.
So that's the same for both, though. And they're both 12-month or annual reporting of the last 50, which may extend more than 1 year, suppress if less than 10. So that's a little different, and I guess that's because infrainguinal bypass is a little less common than CABG. I don't see that as a huge problem. I mean, it looks to me like these two things are reasonably aligned and that we should not concern ourselves. That would be my first impression at this. I certainly don't think we should consider them competing.
I agree with that.
I do too.
Okay. Any objection to that? The developers were on the phone, but I don't know that we need any. I don't know that we need any input from the developers if we're willing to accept these as they are. So why don't we move on to pancreatic resection then?
Okay, page 50. The first two measures, 365 and 366, are mortality and volume measures, which are identified, designated by the developer as paired measure, and the developer has committed already to harmonize the measures to include benign disease in 365. And the focus of those measures together is similar to measure 738. Measure 738 combines in the way in which it is constructed, combines volume and mortality. It was endorsed in September of 10. So the real question before the group is are there opportunities for harmonization?
Yes. This is Rick. I was the primary reviewer for these, and I've looked them over. If the developer of 1 and 2 did what we asked and combined them into a single measure that incorporates both volume and mortality, it would be essentially identical to the second measure. The only difference remaining would be that we asked them to include all kinds of pancreatic surgery and not just cancer operations, and the third measure there, the one that's already approved, is only cancer. But I think it would certainly be reasonable. My recommendation would be to harmonize all three of these into a single measure that covers all kinds of pancreatic operations and includes both mortality and volume.
May I speak to that? This is Dr. Ron.
Please.
There is actually a rather fundamental difference between these measures, which is that 0738, the leapfrog predictor, is collected at a hospital level. In other words, it's collected through a survey of hospitals, whereas the ARC measures can only be estimated using a patient level or hospitalization level data set, because the ARC measures implicitly include a risk adjustment model that includes patient characteristics, whereas the leapfrog measure does not. The reviewer's question also, this is another area that we're working on for all of these paired measures similar to AAA to create a composite that incorporates both the volume and mortality, which is the same underlying principle of the leapfrog method. But the major difference is the risk adjustment, which uses patient-level data for the ARC measures.
So I guess would that mean, I'm sorry to make it so oversimplified, but does that basically mean that these columns in the third column basically cannot be harmonized?
Right. We can certainly harmonize the denominator and numerator definitions. In theory, we haven't had this discussion recently, but if Leapfrog agrees to incorporate the same changes with respect to including benign disease and so forth, there should be an opportunity for harmonizing the denominator and numerator specifications. But obviously, we can't harmonize the difference between measures that are based on hospitalization-level data and include patient-level risk factors with a measure that doesn't. So if you'll notice in the details section, the endorsed measure 0738, that's basically a measure of observed mortality, which they use, and not risk-adjusted mortality. Now, there's room for discussion about whether risk adjustment is important or not, but it is part of the intrinsic construction of the ARC measure that it includes risk adjustment based on patient characteristics.
Oh, I guess for brevity's sake, then I would say that we appreciate the efforts of ARC on 66, and insofar as these can evolve into the measure that we envisioned in the Washington D.C. discussion, that sounds like we're on the right track. But I think considering these as either you know, potentially in harmony with the leapfrog measures or competing, this is a second order question. I'm not sure how I would actually define that. I'm not sure we've had another circumstance like this that's come up that we can draw case law from. I mean, we have the pediatric surgery measures that we're trying to reconcile and harmonize the administrative ones, but we're going to consider them as competing with the, certainly, but here we have registry measures that we're going to end up ultimately, I guess, consider competing.
But is what you want to do right now is to encourage that ARC continues in its effort to combine 365 and 366, and then to the extent that it's possible to do so, to harmonize numerator and denominator with LeapFrog and address, given what Patrick has said?
And in my own opinion to that, I'd be interested in what the rest of the committee says, is that I think the work that Patrick proposed, the first part of what you said, sounds very constructive. I don't know that there's much constructive to be gained from harmonizing the numerator and the denominator of a risk-adjusted claims-based measure against a non-risk-adjusted claims-based measure. That would seem like kind of a pointless exercise to me. So if they're going to be different, they should be different, I guess. And so I'm not sure I would endorse the second part of what you said, but I'd be interested in others' opinions.
This is Rick. I agree with that.
Me too.
Okay. Assuming that others also agree, then we will not pursue the question of harmonization of numerator denominator. And that gets us to the end of the work for today, considering we're moving 5:15 to tomorrow, and we could open the line for public comment if that's acceptable to you, Dr. Torchiana.
Yes, please. Thanks, Melinda.
And all lines are open.
Okay, so it's, we're not hearing any public comments.
Look forward to talking to everyone tomorrow.
Okay, and before we get off the phone, I just want to remind everyone about our conference call tomorrow from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, as well as I sent out the updated proposed steering committee responses to the submitted comments. Please provide any feedback regarding the updated response and send that back to the project team by Monday, next Monday, August 8th. Also, please complete the availability survey if you have not done so. We are trying to schedule a conference call to review the newly combined ARC and Children's of Boston measure for the pediatric cardiac surgery measure, as well as we're trying to schedule a conference call to review submitted comments for phase two in October. And please submit that survey also by Monday, August 8th.
Thank you all, and especially thank you for helping us work through the related and competing work. It's a relatively new activity with NQF, and so your assistance in helping us as we go through that is very much appreciated, as well as all the time you've committed to this project, past and future.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much. Thanks, Linda. Thanks, Alexis.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.